I'm Julie Burstein. I'm here for Leonard Lopate. Think about walking down the aisles of your grocery store trying to choose an olive oil or a piece of fish for dinner. You really only have the labels on the bottles or the display case to tell you what you're buying. But increasingly, those labels might not necessarily tell you what you're getting. Joining me now to explain what food fraud is and why it's on the rise is Lindsay Layton. She is national political reporter for The Washington Post, and her article on food fraud appeared in Monday's paper. I'm pleased to welcome her to today's underreported segment. Hello.
Hi, Julie. How are you?
Very well, thank you, especially on this lovely sunny day here in New York. I bet in Washington it's sunny, too. I hope, anyway.
Oh, the cherry blossoms are blooming, so
how
it's the best time.
Lovely. So tell me about this kind of food fraud. Is it the sort of thing that's dangerous to our health?
Well, in many cases, this is economically motivated fraud, right? So it's people substituting less expensive ingredients for a premium product and trying to pass it off as a premium product. So in most cases, we're not talking about a health threat, but sometimes we are. Probably the most notorious recent case was the melamine that was in,
in milk
products in China, and you know that killed people. So, so there certainly can be a public health dimension to this problem.
But it sounds like it's financially motivated. That this is people trying to pass off lesser quality and lesser expensive things as the high quality olive oil or honey. Honey was one of those that you wrote about that people may be doctoring it with sugar or corn syrup and still calling it pure honey.
That's right, Julie. And in fact, the people who are very good at this, who are expert at this, don't want to have a public health component because they'll be found out. So, you know, if you're really good at this kind of fraud, you're trying to do this in a safe way so you won't be detected. But some of those products that you mentioned, wine, cheese, honey, vinegars, olive oil, fruit juice, that's another area where this is big, and also seafood. It seems that this is a particular problem in the seafood industry. There was a huge case that was just prosecuted that involved a guy in Virginia who had imported 10 million pounds of Vietnamese catfish and was selling it nationwide as sole, flounder, grouper, because at the end of the day, when you've got a fillet of fish and you're looking at it and you're a buyer for a restaurant chain or a food company, you can't really tell what you're looking at. One piece of fillet looks like another piece of fillet, so it's hard to detect.
Is that true? Because I know when I go into the supermarket and look at the different fish, there's a subtle difference between. So when I read about that, I thought, wow, is Vietnamese catfish really that close to fine quality sole that a buyer wouldn't see the difference?
Well, the people who know more about this than I say that it is tough for even experienced people in the seafood industry because a lot of this comes frozen in big blocks. You know, so you're looking at a block of frozen fillets.
And if it's white or pink or whatever,
right,
that's about all you can tell.
There's an interesting difference also because of our Americans' culinary taste. We prefer fillet, but in a place like Japan, they prefer to eat the whole fish. So it's a lot easier to detect substitution if you've ordered a whole fish and it comes at your table and you can recognize what
it
is.
And it's got those whiskers on it.
Right.
So
exactly.
How was this detected? How did they find this guy and figure out this Vietnamese, and this is a lot of Vietnamese catfish, that this was being sold as something else?
That's true. And the prosecutor, again, this is an assistant U.S. attorney he's in California, and he said that only one or two of the buyers, and there were hundreds of buyers for this product from 2004 through 2005, he said only one or two detected the fraud because a lot of them are not really testing. There are a growing number of major food manufacturers, food processors in this country who are turning to new technologies, doing DNA sampling to detect, and also there's another tool, isotope ratio analysis, to really drill down and take a look at the molecular level of the product to determine where it came from, what it is. So there is a growing number, who are using this new technology, but it's really only been available for the last 5 years or so, at least the DNA sequencing.
You write about a couple of high school students who found this interesting and with some scientists from Rockefeller University started analyzing the DNA.
That's true. They were two students at the Trinity School, and they were doing a project on DNA analysis, and they weren't looking for food fraud. They were just going out, and they wanted to collect a bunch of samples and do the DNA sequencing on them. So they went to some neighborhood markets on the Upper West Side. They bought 66 food products, and it turns out that 11 of those 66 were not as they were labeled. We're talking about expensive cheese that was supposed to be made from sheep's milk that actually was made from cow's milk. And we're talking about sturgeon caviar. It was sold as sturgeon caviar, but in fact it came from Mississippi paddlefish and so on. So these kids, with a little detective work and some help from Rockefeller University and the Museum of Natural History there in New York, were able to find the fraud.
And what happened next? Once they found it, what did the FDA go into action, or what happens once these sorts of things are uncovered?
Well, Julie, you know, the FDA is largely the federal agency that is responsible for making sure that food is properly labeled. But that agency, as most folks know, is overwhelmed with food safety and with preventing foodborne illnesses and contaminated food from getting on the market. So that's their first concern. And this is actually an area of great frustration within the food industry, because they say that the federal regulators aren't doing a whole lot to help them with this economically motivated fraud. So the FDA had a public meeting, its first ever, on this topic last year, and they're trying to create some kind of surveillance system where they would be tipped off to fraud around the country, and they've purchased a DNA sequencer, and they're trying to do some of this work, but they admit that their first priority is public health, and that they're looking for, you know, salmonella and E. coli and bacteria in food, and that this is really a secondary or maybe a third priority or fourth.
So it sounds like it's a capacity issue, that they just don't have the capacity to do this. If it's not going to kill anybody, it may not be something that they'll be able to investigate.
I think that's the agency's position right now. And I think they also are hoping that the food industry will be doing more and more testing and self-regulation or self-policing. And certainly big companies with big name brands that they want to protect are doing more and more of this kind of analysis and spot checking.
Well, that was going to be my next question, is this something that the industries themselves need to be responsible for, that the honey producers, if they really want people to be convinced that the honey that they're putting out there is truly honey, are they the ones who can gather together and police themselves in a way?
There are, in various segments of the food industry, the honey people are working together, the seafood industry is working together, they're pooling resources, they're trying to do their own policing. They've got, the seafood people have a hotline set up, so if you're a seafood company and you know that a competitor is cheating in some way, you can call in with a tip, and you know they'll try and go out and investigate it and test the product. And so there's more and more of this happening as more people become aware of the extent of this problem.
Are there things that we as consumers can do to protect ourselves from this, or is this at a level at which, just walking down the aisles in the supermarket, we probably would never catch it?
I think it's awfully hard as a consumer. I mean, I think, It helps certainly if you shop in a place where you trust the quality control. If you can ask questions when you're at the seafood counter about where that fish came from, and they can, you feel like you've got a relationship of trust. This is really all about. It's trust and deception. So it helps if you have some place where you respect the retailer or the restaurateur, and you have some amount of faith that what you're paying for is what you're going to get. You can also look at labels and scrutinize them. I mean, look for imports. I don't mean to be xenophobic about this, but the increase in fraud is happening at a time when this country is being flooded with imported food, and because we don't inspect a lot of those imports, it's very difficult to be assured of the quality, and that seems to be a big opportunity for people who are trying to perpetrate fraud. So, if you know that this jar of honey came from some local honey maker, I mean, you can have a greater degree of confidence, perhaps, than if it was imported from a place where you don't know what the controls were.
So it may be another argument for farmers markets and local production.
Well, I think that the local food movement would see it that way, certainly.
We just have a few seconds left. What called to you about this story? How did you find out about this?
I cover food safety primarily for the newspaper, and I was talking to people in the food industry, and it just sort of came up as a this is not exactly food safety, but it's somewhat related, and I had heard some tales. And
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm going to have to interrupt, but thank you so much, Lindsay Layton, national political reporter for the Washington Post.